Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Welcome to NFL Live, presented by Ego.
The first round of the 2020 draft is in the books. The Bengals opted for Joe Burrow with the top overall pick, and then Tua went to the Dolphins at 5, Herbert to the Chargers at 6. We also saw 15 players from the SEC taken on the first night, and according to Elias, that's the most first-round picks from any conference in NFL draft history.
This is an iconic night on the American sports calendar.
The first ever virtual NFL draft. The Cincinnati Bengals select Joe Burrow. The second pick, Chase Young. The Miami Dolphins select Tua Tagovailoa.
Getting that call, it was just a joyful experience.
Go! Go.
It's amazing, man. I've worked my whole life for this.
Come on. Can you?
Come on. Come on. Got it.
Hello, everybody. I'm Wendy Nix. Happy to have you with us for NFL Live the day after and the day, of course, of round two. Rex Ryan is here. So, too, Dan Orlovsky and Tim Hasselbeck. About last night, we start with the quarterbacks. There were four taken in the first round on Thursday, led by LSU's Joe Burrow, who was officially selected by the Bengals with the first pick. He'll stay home in the great state of Ohio. With the fifth pick, the Dolphins went with Alabama's Tua Tagovailoa. Miami hasn't had a Pro Bowl quarterback since Dan Marino in 1995, the longest active drought in the league, according to Elias. Then right after Tua, it was the Chargers, and they took Oregon quarterback Justin Herbert, who recently earned MVP honors at both the Rose Bowl and the Senior Bowl. And then this, the Green Bay Packers moved up and selected Utah State's Jordan Love, the first time in the common draft era they've traded up to the first round to draft a quarterback. Here is Jordan Love.
I'm not sure how that is going to work. You know, I'm excited to get back here and just, like I said, learn as much as I can from Aaron. You know, he's an amazing player, and I know I'm going to learn a lot from him. And I'm not sure how that situation will work, but like I said, I'm just excited to be behind them and, you know, do whatever the team needs, you know, when I'm asked.
Love, of course, was asked about current quarterback Aaron Rodgers, and we say hello to Dan Graziano, who's covering the Packers for the draft. And, Dan, this was a shocker. What went into Green Bay's decision to not only draft Jordan Love but move up to do so?
Yeah, Wendy, first thing I thought was about a conversation I had with Packers GM Brian Gutekunst last July in training camp. And I was asking him what they liked about Matt LaFleur, who they just hired as head coach. And he told me, we thought he was the best fit for us, not just short-term with Aaron, but long-term in terms of what we want to do as far as developing quarterbacks. And so last night, this came back to me, and the Packers are a team that's always thinking long-term. They're not going to draft just for immediate need, just for help this year. And talking to Gutekunst late last night after the pick was made, he made it clear that that's how they approached this. He said if we felt there was a real difference maker at another position available at that point in the draft, we would have considered him, but we didn't. So they looked and they thought they had a guy that whose traits and whose character said good starting NFL quarterback. They feel like they were adding a fourth round pick to move up four spots was a small price to pay to get that. And it's just in character in terms of how the Packers view their roster construction. They're not about we need to win this year. They're about we need to be in position to win every single year.
All right, Dan, thank you. Now, before last night, as we look closely at the Packers draft history, they had used each of their previous eight first round picks on defensive players. Four of those are no longer with Green Bay. After coming just one win shy of a Super Bowl appearance last year, the Packers now sit Love for an entire year. They could certainly, something a first-round rookie quarterback hasn't done since Jake Locker in 2011. Here is Aaron Rodgers talking before the draft about his team possibly taking a quarterback.
Well, look, I mean, I'm a realist. I know where we're at as an organization and where I'm at in my career. I still feel like I have a ton of years left. playing at a high level. I'm confident enough. I've always felt like it doesn't matter who you bring in, they're not going to be able to beat me out anytime soon. So I feel really confident about my abilities and my plays.
All right, guys, Rex Ryan, I'll start with you. Certainly that's the case. You expect Aaron Rodgers to be safe in his position, but there is an opportunity cost here, and they don't get him any help. So, Rex, your reaction to that decision?
Yeah, I think me and almost every other person on the planet had to be shocked by this move. And the reason I say it is, look, Aaron Rodgers, even the GM said it, he goes, we have the best quarterback, you know, in the league. Well, why don't you act like you are the best quarterback in the league? You're one game shy of getting to a Super Bowl. Let's say Aaron Rodgers has a 3-year window, 3 more years left to play at an extremely high level. Well, why don't we go for it every year instead of sitting back saying, well, we'll build for the future. I love it. By the way, this pick is not the same pick it was 15 years ago when Aaron Rodgers was drafted. Aaron Rodgers was in the conversation being the first player selected. Jordan Love was never, ever in that conversation. So to me, it's not apples to apples. So to me, I think it's just a mistake. We'll see how it goes. Look, they drafted quarterbacks of the future in recent drafts as well. And by the way, every single one of them failed. So to me, this is what you have. Let's finally surround this guy with some weapons. And to say you don't have a game changer, it says that you're not looking to get a game changer the rest of your draft, I think is ridiculous. It's a deep draft from receivers, but I wish they would have given this guy the tools that he needs. One game, one more game, and they can go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I find it a really good decision by Green Bay. I think two things could be true. One, that they chose the future over the present, but also that they can find a way to get better for 2020 season. Like, they had the 28th pick, right? And so the receivers that were left over are the T. Higgins, LaVisca Chenaults, you know, Claypools. There's a group of receiver, Duvernay out of Texas. They might see that group as a very similar group. And so the thought is, well, why are we going to use that first round pick on a receiver that we believe that we can get in the 62nd pick, and so go up and get the quarterback, which secures the fifth-year option for your future, and then find a way to get a receiver at the 62nd pick. And again, there's a really big group of those second-round receivers that could be impactful for Green Bay. So, listen, the general manager's job is so difficult to go, okay, what, like, how do I get better today, but also be focused on the future? And so the reality is this. If Aaron Rodgers is as good as I still think he is, Jordan Love is not going to see the field for a long time, and he controls that. Yes, they need to give him better weapons. We all know that. But let's see what happens in round two or three before we say the Packers made a massive mistake.
Right on. This kid's not going to see the field for a while. You're certainly right on that. Where I look at it is, let's see if you get a T. Higgins in the next pick in the second round. Right. I wouldn't risk it. You're so close to a Super Bowl, man. Like, go get it. The future's a whole string of nows, and quite honestly, I don't see how you helped your football team. Look, you know, we'll see how it goes. It'll play out in 5 years. We'll see.
If he's not going to see the field for a long time, then it's a terrible pick. The reality is you need to see him soon so you can evaluate him, and you're going to end up, you know, using the fifth-year option on him. If he's not going to see the field and you have at least 2 years to evaluate him before picking up the fifth-year option, then it's a wasted pick is really what it is. And, you know, in terms of the wide receivers and who would be available, you don't need to trade up. You know what I mean? They trade up to get Jordan Love. And I think Rex is exactly right when he talks about it not being apples to apples when Brett Favre was the quarterback. You think back. They're coming off a 10-6 season. They draft Aaron Rodgers. At that point, Aaron Rodgers' rookie year, they go 4-12. Brett Favre throws 29 interceptions. You think Brett would have liked some help? Certainly there was good football still ahead for Brett Favre. We saw it. And so I think when you look at this from Aaron Rodgers' perspective, he thinks he has more than 2 years left. I would agree with him. I think everybody sitting here would agree with that. So, you know, the idea that you were, you know, play, you know, Aaron for 2 years and then move on, then you would have to figure out if Jordan Love could play in 2 years before you pick up that fifth-year option. There is no long-term in the NFL.
Mm-mm.
But here's the thing, Tim. We know this about the NFL, right? A lot of organizations make panic moves when they don't have a plan at quarterback. And so I'm not going to sit here and bash them. Because, again, what happens if they look at that group of eight receivers and go, we feel really confident that one of those guys is going to be there and we see them all the same. So was the better move to take a receiver that they had ranked as – But what was a better move for them to take a receiver at, you know, that they have ranked in the 50 to the 70 range at 28? Or do they go up and get the quarterback and go, we still feel confident we can get a receiver? I understand that it is a very similar situation to just what ended in New England, right? You didn't help Tom Brady enough at the end of his career. But we've all lauded this draft for being super deep at the wide receiver position. And they may get one of those guys that are still impactful in year one.
What's interesting,
but you have tackle or tight end as well. I mean, it's not like it had to be a wide receiver. Could have been a tackle. They need one of those, and they also need a tight end.
Well, you know what, guys? No matter where you fall on the legitimacy of this decision, we can all agree it was at the very least surprising. I think we're unanimous on that front. The Dolphins, meanwhile, another headlining team. They made three picks in the first round yesterday, led by number five. Perhaps franchise quarterback Tua Tagovailoa with the 18th pick. They added some protection up front for Tua, USC tackle Austin Jackson, and then at 30, cornerback in Auburn's Noah Igbinoghani. The Dolphins have been unable to find consistency at quarterback since Dan Marino, the Hall of Famer, retired before the 2000 season. They've used 21 different starting QBs since that time, tied for third most in the league. They are 22 games below 500 in that span, and have only had a winning record one time in the last decade. The Dolphins have been to the playoffs just four times in the last 20 seasons, their last postseason coming in 2000. So when you put it like that. All right, the question, though, I think everybody's asking today, Tim, is Tua over Justin Herbert, agree or disagree?
Oh, I agree. And, really for me, if you were assuming that Tua was healthy, I don't think it was all that close. You know, part of what happens when guys get drafted, it's based on what they've done, but also what they project to be. And so, you know, for Tua, when you watch him play at Alabama, there's so much, you know, conceptually, you know, what they were doing at Alabama that you can see translate to the National Football League. So you can see him doing those things well. And obviously he did it at an extremely high level. The concern is the injury. But when you look at Herbert, I think the concern ends up being that you're basing a lot of it on potential, a lot of it on, hey, what can he be? Not necessarily what he has, you know, what he accomplished as a player. In fact, kind of thought he was held back a little bit as a player in that Oregon offense. So, you know, I think when you look at it that way, if you're making the assumption that the Miami Dolphins doctors were fine with his health, then I think it was an easy decision.
Well, you know what, Tim? I don't disagree that when you watch Tua as a player, I mean, you got to sit back and like, wow, this is a no-brainer. It'd be him and Joe Burrow in the conversation. However, to just dismiss these injuries, it's not just the hip injury, it's every single injury, like five surgeries worth of injuries. And to me, that's a real, real risk. I thought it's the biggest gamble ever. However, Miami was in a unique situation where I think this was a team that could make that gamble. Why? You have five first-round picks in the next two seasons, so it made perfect sense. Look, they got to build it from the paint in. You got to force it that way with a small quarterback. You look at what the Saints have done with Drew Brees and protecting him. They get those big, massive guys playing guard. The Dolphins added Eric Flowers in the offseason. That's one right there. The center, they picked up the backup from New England. We need another center. We need a guard. And now, once you get that established, now it fits in. You've got everything you need for this young man. But by no means do you play this guy early. So I think it's a correct selection, but you better make darn sure he's 100%, all right? And not just, hey, the hip's coming around. We got to make sure he's 100% before he ever sees the field. And I think it's a great pick, but it's the biggest risk I've ever seen.
Yeah, I agree with both you guys. I mean, Tim, you bring up a great point. Like, intellectually, Tua is going to be really ready for the NFL because of the stuff that he ran and learned in college. He'll be really good with understanding different types of concepts. And, Coach, you bring up great points of, like, with the offensive line, right, building it inside out. And really, this now becomes the two most imperative. These become the most two kind of paramount things for this. One, what do the Dolphins do now? I mean, you made this selection. You took the risk, which was 100% the right decision. But now you got to make sure that you protect that decision, right? And so build that football team up around Tua. This is why it was a good match, because Chris Greer and Brian Flores are in a long-term plan together in lockstep, and they're not going to be pressured to have to get Tua on the field to prove to ownership, hey, we can win with this young player, right? And so they can be patient and build a really healthy football team around him. And now it's really up to Tua as well. Like, Tua's got to prove the Dolphins that they were right to kind of roll the dice on him when it comes to injury. And his biggest thing is to realize, you know, make sure you understand the player that you are, and you know that the availability is a big deal in the NFL. You don't have to prove how tough you are, but this was absolutely the right decision for the Dolphins.
All right, gentlemen, stand by. We will say hello now to our insiders, Adam and Mort. And when you think about Tua's injury history, Mort, and the Chargers' belief in Tyrod Taylor, how likely is it that either Tua or Herbert are starting when week one rolls around?
Yeah, well, first of all, I got to have a conversation with Rex at some point about those five surgeries. You know, Tua missed four games, three because of the hip injury in his Alabama career. For the Dolphins, you know, Brian Flores is in it to win it. He's got a new offensive coordinator in Chan Gailey to simplify that offense, but he also has Ryan Fitzpatrick. I don't know if anybody took notice of how well Fitzpatrick played last year. I think he went up to Foxborough and won a pretty big game that hurt the Patriots' really long-term chances to go back to another Super Bowl. But for Tua, the expectation is not that he'll go in and start, and he'll probably physically be ready. But remember, we don't have an offseason. We don't even know what preseason is going to be about. So it's not just about the physical part, it's about the mental part. But one of the things that you hear that are legendary at Alabama, and Nick Saban often likes his ones, go against his ones, and a lot of NFL players on that defense, and Tua at times and many times has just been magic in practice. Just when you think that the better players are on the defensive side, Tua has a way of opening your eyes. Oh, by the way, if it was good enough for Patrick Mahomes to sit here, it's probably okay for Tua too.
And Mort, as for Justin Herbert in Los Angeles, the Chargers have no immediate plans to play him. Don't want to have to play him right away. They believe and like Tyrod Taylor, and so Tyrod Taylor is going to go into camp and going to go into the season as the starting quarterback. And they could afford to bring along Justin Herbert at their pace as they break him in, as they get ready to bring him up to speed in their offense. Again, no rush to get Herbert ready, but they believe in him long term. And in other news today, the Texans right now are getting close to finalizing an extension that's not yet done with the Texans offensive tackle, left tackle Laremy Tunsil. When it does get done, it is expected to be a 3-year extension for $66 million. That includes $50 million guaranteed. Some people thought the Texans should have had a deal done with them before. They're going to get a deal done with them now. It's not done. They're going through the language right now. They're on the phone this afternoon trying to get that deal final.
Shefty, thank you.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Giveback, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Six receivers went in the first round, and it was the speedster, Henry Ruggs III, that led things off. The Raiders took him with the 12th pick, their first draft since making the move to Las Vegas. And then his teammate, Jerry Jeudy from Alabama, taken by the Broncos at 15. Denver putting together a nice offense led by Drew Locke, Melvin Gordon, Cortland Sutton, Noah Fant, and now Jerry Jeudy. At 17, Dallas opted for Oklahoma receiver C.D. Lamb. He led the nation in yards per reception last year. Here he is with our Susie Culver.
You've played with three different starting quarterbacks, Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray, won the Heisman, and they're starters in the NFL. What do you want Dak Prescott to know about how you can contribute to his success?
He's definitely going to get an ultimate competitor, a guy that's willing to learn. I can't wait to get used to, helping him and just helping him look like a better quarterback and he's helping me look like a better receiver.
Well, who better than to talk Cowboys than Ed Werder, who joins us now. And Ed, what factored into the Cowboys' thought process last night?
Well, you know what was interesting is how it unfolded. The Cowboys were actually in a situation where they had to contemplate some unexpected options. They had done approximately 24 mock drafts, and never was CeeDee Lamb available at their pick at 17. Ultimately, they declined 3 trade offers and ignored their more urgent needs on defense to draft CeeDee Lamb, who they had as the number 6 player on their board. Jerry Jones said opinion around the NFL that wide receiver wasn't a priority for the Cowboys probably prevented other interested teams from trading in front of Dallas. In fact, a division rival, the Eagles, actually tried to make a trade with the Falcons at 16 to get in position to take CeeDee Lamb in front of the Cowboys. They had to settle for picking another receiver, Jalen Reagor, at 21. Stephen Jones said that compared to the other options on the draft board, CeeDee Lamb's name was just a blinking light that could not be ignored. And Mike McCarthy, a new Cowboys head coach in his first draft process with this group, really commended the group's thinking in terms of honoring their draft board, drafting the best player over addressing a need. And Wendy, to put this into some perspective, you know, the Cowboys are coming off a season where for the first time in the 60-year history of the franchise, they had a 4,000-yard passer, a 1,000-yard rusher, and 2,000-yard receivers. Never have done that before in history. Now they add CeeDee Lamb, but it does come at a cost. Their other option was to add an edge rusher and Lavon Chaisson from LSU. Now they're probably a little more dependent on 2 suspended players, Randy Gregory and Alden Smith, than they'd like to be.
Ed, thank you. That's how it works. You do one thing, it means you don't do another. We're joined now by Ryan Clark and Marcus Spears as well. And Ryan, as you heard Ed, look, they had the opportunity, the Cowboys did, to trade this pick, turn down 3 offers. Any surprise, Marcus, actually, at the Cowboys' plan?
No surprise at all. Obviously, we had heard about pass rusher, but the fact that CeeDee Lamb got there, and listen, for everybody that's saying, Wendy, that this was not a need, they had Randall Cobb in the slot last year who departed. So this fills some sort of a gap. And now my mind directly goes to Dak Prescott. The fact that Dak Prescott has Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, and now CeeDee Lamb in the slot, and I think Blake Jarwin, the tight end, is going to be a superstar. He going to roll up numbers. So the last night it was presented to me by your man, Wendy, Ryan Clark, that Dak should play under the tender, ball out, and then get paid. I'm trying to figure out when in the hell somebody should pass up $100 million guaranteed to take 27 because they got a rookie receiver from Oklahoma. Hey, so I'm going to sit back and I'm going to let Ryan Clark tell me why the draft pick was a good pick.
Marcus Spears, don't you include me in your comments when ain't nobody ask you no questions about me. We were talking about CeeDee Lamb. And if you look at the draft pick of CeeDee Lamb, they did the right thing. If a guy is ranked that high on your board and someone falls to you that you feel like is somebody you can't pass up, you have to make that pick. And let's look at what the Cowboys have been doing in recent drafts, or even as far back to the Johnny Manziel draft. It was a guy that Jerry Jones loved. He was infatuated with Johnny Manziel, but he went O-lineman because it was the better player. It was better for the organization. And that's what they did here. Obviously, pass rusher is something that they covet, and you can get one later on in the draft. There were no more Chase Youngs in this draft. CeeDee Lamb is going to be a player. He's going to be a all-pro, a pro bowler at some point. And if you can help your offense continue to roll up yardage, then you win. Look at the Kansas City Chiefs. No one's sitting around saying they should have been drafting pass rushers when they go out and get Mecole Hardman because he stretches the defense, and you can't beat him because you can't outscore him. It's a great pick by the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, hey, I tell you what, Ryan, I'm going to sign the $100 million contract just so you guys know I'm going to go ahead and do it.
Thank you, Cole.
When I look at this, man.
Thank you.
When you see it, CeeDee Lamb, I don't disagree. I think he's got what it takes to be a Pro Bowler. And you know who else does? Mike McCarthy. To me, when you're looking at this kid, when he came out, I was thinking, this guy reminds me of Devontae Adams. Because at the top of the route, he's so physical, and he's such a competitor for the football. Oh, and then, by the way, you can't tackle him. His run after the catch is amazing. And when you put Gallup and Cooper on the outside, whew, I mean, and oh, by the way, the running back's decent. And the offensive line's decent. This offense is going to be a joke. Now, what are they going to do about pass rush? I'm not sure, because I think what they're going to do in the second round is take a safety. The three top safeties in the draft are still available. So I think when you look at Xavier McKinney out of Alabama, Delpit out of LSU, and then Antoine Winfield Jr.
They got three
ballers sitting right there. So this might be an unbelievable draft for the Cowboys, especially if they land one of these guys.
It just warms my heart to hear y'all talk so well about the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, it means the world to me. I sit on ESPN and I hear so much negativity surrounding my Cowboys. But the fact that we got it right with CeeDee Lamb, and we still got players that we identified in this draft that we could be a better team. Damn it, if we ain't, Nate, I'm leaving ESPN.
Hey, Marcus,
and I'm going to just do stuff.
No, this is what it is.
Camera. We better
win
this year.
What it is, that's the thing. We're just building you up so they can let you down. We want you to have a great offseason. It's a lot of tough stuff going on. So we want you to feel so good and bubble up and get full. And we're going to expect this great offense, and you guys are going to score a ton of points and still be sitting home with us watching the playoffs in the end. This is what the Dallas Cowboys do to you and all of their fans all the time. But for one day, on Jerry Jones' yacht, he was the true captain of the ship.
Yeah, Ryan Clark, let this man have his moment. Let Marcus live for just a few. All right, fellas, thank you as always. LSU led all schools 5 first-round picks last night, and according to Elias, that's tied for the second most in the first round of any draft in history. Only the Hurricanes had more back in 04. Also the first time in the common draft era that a quarterback, running back, and wide receiver were taken from the same school in the first round of a draft. And LSU tight end Thad Moss, who scored 2 touchdowns in the national championship game, could join his teammates as a draft pick before this weekend is over. And maybe you've heard about his dad. He joins us now. Hall of Famer Randy Moss. And Randy, we'll certainly get to that in just a minute. But let's start with last night's number one pick, who I know you got to see a lot of, and that is Joe Burrow. What have the Bengals found in their new quarterback?
Well, they had a guy that's ready to take the bull by the horns and just come in ready to play. There was a lot of questions concerning Joe Burrow throughout the season. Everybody's talking about his offensive weapons, how many guys he had to work with. But when I seen him firsthand, being out there throwing the ball, being able to run a pro-style offense, how he moves in the pocket, being able to keep the chains moving and keep the offense on the field, that's why I think the Cincinnati Bengals have found their man. I like all his intangibles, guys, and the one thing that really stands out to me is he makes everybody on the defense aware that he's on the field. So he's going to get everybody in the offense involved, and that's what I like in this young quarterback.
Man, I tell you what, Randy, this guy, because Randy would tell me about how good this quarterback was, and I remember, I was like, he can't be that good. Then you watch him, and it's like, oh, my, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, first off, it's never happened in college football ever. He had the greatest year of any quarterback in the history of the game. But it's amazing. He can throw on time, you know, on time. His poise in the pocket, like Randy talks about, this is unreal. And then he'll sit back, and he's so accurate with the football. This is where he reminded me of Tom Brady. Man, he puts that ball right under your chin, protects the receiver from collisions. He gives him a chance to run after the catch with it. The guy's just amazing. And then, by the way, that speech, if you're a Cincinnati Bengal, like they probably sold 100,000 jerseys with Joe Burrow on it. And if they would have, you know, messed that pick up and gone with somebody else, oh my gosh, you can forget about it. But this guy's a perfect quarterback for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Well, let me ask you this, Randy, because Burrow going number one was expected. We sort of knew that leading up to this thing. But then there were the Packers. They trade up to draft a quarterback, Jordan Love. I think if no matter what you think about the decision, it was a surprise. What did you think about making the move for Love instead of adding some help for their current quarterback, Aaron Rodgers?
Well, it was kind of shocking to me as a fan and as an analyst to really see that Aaron Rodgers is still playing at a high level, and for them to really use their first round pick on a quarterback, knowing what they have already there. So when I look at the Green Bay Packers and them bringing a guy like Jordan Love is, I don't know if we've seen the best of Aaron Rodgers, but now that we know that competition is in the building, as a football fan, as a former player, I like what the Green Bay Packers has done. I don't know how much better Aaron Rodgers can get, but with them bringing Jordan Love into that building, it's going to light a fire up under Aaron Rodgers. So I look for big things coming out of Green Bay in that offense.
Yeah, that's just human nature, and we certainly know Aaron Rodgers is a competitor. Let me ask you this. There was also the little matter of Henry Ruggs III. He went 12th overall to the Raiders, and I know you've had a chance to spend a little time with him. So before I ask you this, take a look.
Y'all going to the National Football League, eh? Hey, as soon as you're done, get your ass back up here. Come on.
You want to work with your gloves, that's cool with me. The penalty just doubles. All right, I'm just letting y'all know. For every drop, I'm looking for 5 burpees. We're starting off. Y'all professionals now. This college is over with.
Come here. Sit down.
If I tell you it's a weakness of what I see, that means over the next week, week and a half, or before you go, dog, you need to home in on it before they see you. You know what I'm saying?
All right, so we got Randy the Hall of Famer, Randy the dad, and now Randy the coach. Rex, how do you do?
Shoot. Hey, and no surprise, Randy was incredible. But, you know, it's a little different. This guy's got a little stroke to him, you know what I mean? Because if everybody has seen him, a first ballot Hall of Famer. So Randy can go out there and tell him anything, line up backwards, they're going to do it. But he's so professional, and I know Randy. He could do it all. There's no question. Randy, you know, it'd be a little different if they saw my tape. Nobody would listen. All right? So, but to me, I thought he did a great job. And you just see those kids right there, how they respond to them, and man, oh man, yeah, Randy can do anything, no surprise. But you know what? He enjoys fishing too much for all the coaches out there.
Yeah, don't worry, he's not coming for you, Randy. Listen, what did the Raiders get in Ruggs? You could see their reaction last night; they were thrilled with the pick. So, what are they getting?
Well, I think they're really getting a hungry, determined, very explosive, and talented wide receiver. You know, I think that this year's wide receiver class for this year's draft is very, very deep. I mean, you're going to get steals late in this draft. But when you look at the first receiver taken off the board from Alabama, when you look at the talent that they had on their roster, Ruggs is going to bring the Oakland Raiders something that they've been missing, and that's that home run threat. And what he's able to bring to this Oakland offense with Carr at the quarterback, just being able to get the ball in his hands. As you can see what he did for the Alabama Crimson Tide, he was able to stretch the field. But I think that Ruggs is most effective within the 5 to 10 yard range where you can get the ball in his hands and make all 11 guys try to tackle this young man.
All right, Randy, one more. We joked about the number of hats you wear, but this week, not a coach or an analyst, but also a father, as you wait for your son Thad's name to be called, what has it been like for you, not as a player this time, but as a dad?
It's just been nerve-wracking for me, Wendy, just being able to think back a million years ago, back when I was going through this process, and how emotional I was, and the roller coaster that it takes you up and down throughout the whole weekend. And as you can see the pictures of me and my son, just being a proud dad to see him reach a goal of being able to play in the national championship, me being able to play in the league, and now that I got a second generation, hopefully to be introduced into the National Football League. So I think I'm about as nervous and jittery as he is. But like I said, God is good. We're going to just keep our faith in God and just see what he has in store for us.
All right, Randy, we'll be watching, and best of luck to you and also to Thad.
GEICO has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
You give something and you get something, right? So we obviously gave up a lot. We weren't in Las Vegas. We understand that. But nevertheless, the draft went on. And what we did get, guys, is to be inside some of these houses, you know, with coaches and GMs. We got to see families. We got to see people together. I mean, a lot of it was cool. So we're not going to do the who wore it best because everybody had on, like, casual wear. But we are going to talk about where they were, Marcus. What did you see that you thought was interesting?
First of all, Jerry Jones on the yacht was the biggest flex I've ever seen in my entire life. I'm gonna do the draft in the ocean, and I'm quarantining better than anybody could ever quarantine in the history of quarantining. You peasants, I'm a billionaire. I do what I want, and I draft from the ocean.
Oh, and then there was this.
Well, for me, it was Mike Vrabel is the first thing that comes to mind. Dude had somebody in a Frozone suit. And if anybody has ever watched it, you know what Frozone is. And then his other homeboy had a blonde mullet. I'm talking about like straight off of Tiger King. This is what you want out of your background when you're a grimy linebacker. And then they had a dude. They say he was on a stool, but just for background purposes, we're going to continue to think what we thought last night. Mike Vrabel, the winner.
Oh, Bill B. How about this one, Marcus?
Bill Belichick is the guy that has $1 billion and buys a Volvo and drives it around every day. Bill Belichick still has all the money that he's ever made from every check he's gotten in the NFL. That's what his room says. The second thing his room says is, I don't try to impress you with how I dress and coach on the sideline. I damn sure ain't gonna try to impress you in how I live life.
I like the extension cord or whatever it is. Just plug it in. Here we go. You know, no big deal.
Hey, guys.
Oh, sign me up.
Can we talk about Cliff Kingsbury?
Yes.
See, but that's just it, Wendy Nix. That's why he did it. So
it
they had women all around the world saying, sign me up.
Well, I'll
this
say
is
it again.
A thirst trap. This is akin to Cliff Kingsbury posting a picture in a Speedo. That's what he wanted people to see. Look at all this space. Look at all this glass. Don't you want to watch Netflix over here? This is Netflix and chill. He probably make you think, you know what? The Netflix people live here. I get all the new joints. This is where you want to be. Cliff Kingsbury, well done.
We call that
done.
A win. The
I want to go over there.
Yeah, I know. We both do. Listen, the Netflix people can't afford it. All right, we all enjoyed seeing the setup. Here's what quarterback Patrick Mahomes, of course, who played for Cliff at Texas Tech, said. Apparently, what did he say? He said, I'm trying to have a crib like Cliff. To which Tyrann Mathieu returned, no wonder they couldn't afford me anymore. That's fair enough. Listen, we cover all bases here at the Worldwide Leader, and we have a house insider, real estate aficionado, quarantine expert, Diana Rossini. And Diana, apparently you've talked to a few of these guys, including the aforementioned Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah, my career is really taking off here. I've become a real estate insider. Asking these questions today. So if you look at that Kingsbury picture, the one thing that stands out is where are the outlets? If you're running a draft, how are you charging your phones and your computers? He says the outlets are actually pretty far away. He uses a big cable cord to connect it all. And I kind of look at it as I don't think he really thinks he needs it. He's got those 3 cell phones. He seems to be in good space there. And he's kind of also doing that Ryan Gosling crazy stupid love scene there. It seems like that's the house they used in that movie, which I felt like I had to ask him if he ever used that whole Patrick Swayze move. And he says he's never done that. So he doesn't steal the Gosling moves. He just kind of looks like him. Wendy?
Oh, yeah, well, tough road to hoe. Listen, what about Mike Vrabel? Because Ryan mentioned that, and it was an interesting scene. I love Braves, but it was an interesting scene.
Yeah, certainly a little odd. So the way it was described to me was they were watching as a family, all the other teams, the head coaches sitting with their young children, and they were celebrating and hugging. And Vrabel looked over at his 18 and 19-year-old sons, his one son being an offensive lineman at Boston College, thinking, like, I don't really want to hug you guys. Plus, you're all bigger than me. So he said, you know, you guys just do what you want to do. And that's what they came up with. He said he was just locked in to what they were doing with this draft. They talked to John Robinson over the phone. And he's like, the next thing I knew, I looked behind me and they're dressed up and they're wearing my jersey. And it all just happened fast. And he made it a point, Ryan Clark, I know we want to believe in the whole bathroom situation, that wasn't the case. So either way, it seems like that's the most fun house in the league.
Four quarterbacks were selected last night, including three in the first six picks. Joe Burrow went to the Bengals, Tua Tagovailoa to the Dolphins, Justin Herbert to the Chargers, and then the surprise pick, Jordan Love to the Packers.
For me, I think right now, I just want to focus on being able to get to know everyone. I want to build relationships with guys on the team. I want to dive deep into my playbook, understand, what I need to do to get better. And, if my opportunity comes, it comes.
I'm going to do my best to be the best quarterback I can be. And I'm going to get on it as soon as I can and, get the offense down and continue to work hard. And, whether it's in Los Angeles or it's in Eugene, I'm going to do my best.
You know, I knew I was going to have a really good season because I knew, you know, we had really good players coming back. I had great coaches, and we were going to work really, really hard to do it. But to jump up to number one overall is crazy to me. But it's a dream come true.
I would guess so. Joined by our quarterbacks, Dan Orlovsky, Greg McElroy, Tim Hasselbeck. Let's start with you, Dan. Burrow to the Bengals. How's the fit?
It's a really good fit. I mean, Zach Taylor and Brian Callahan have a great understanding of the quarterback position. And then you look at the things that Burrow does. You know, when I think of like a comp for him or comparison, for me, it's always been Steve Young since the middle of the season last year. I think a couple of things stand out. His instincts and reactions in the pocket are just absolutely ridiculous. And they kind of equate to hitting yardage in their offense. And then his ball placement. A lot of guys in the NFL are accurate throwers, but you can go place the football where you want, the different types of throws you make, and then he just does a really good job of seeing the field. You know, you can get into that empty packet, and this is in a way very Tom Brady like, where he'll try to find, all right, what leverage is the best for me, or what matchup is the best for me, how can I manipulate the coverage with my eyes. And so he just has a really good skill set of seeing the full picture. So just that the athleticism that both those guys have, for me, was a comp for Steve Young, and he'll do really, really well. He will overcome anything that gets thrown his way in Cincinnati.
I love Joe Burrow and how he transitioned this past year into Joe Brady's offense. And what I love most, guys, even when his receivers last year were covered, and that wasn't often because of how talented that receiver core was, he found a way to throw them open. He could manipulate his receiver's body with the accuracy that he displayed. And really, even when you were covered, you weren't covered because of just how top shelf that accuracy was. And the way he moved in the pocket, Dan, you described it. He always stayed in the throwing posture and kind of maneuver his body to deliver the throw accurately. He just progressed so incredibly well last year that I think Cincinnati has a home run quarterback under center for the next decade and change.
Yeah, I agree with both of you guys. I mean, there's really nothing to not like about what you saw from Joe Burrow a year ago. And I think in terms of the fit with what Zach Taylor wants to do, he can be a rhythm. We also have seen him be able to create. And I think Mel Kiper has been strong and right on this in terms of the Cincinnati Bengals and who they are as an organization. I mean, you just think about it. They were a double-digit win team, you know, from 2012 through 2015. So, this idea that you cannot win in Cincinnati, I just don't know if that's totally accurate. And so, yeah, they are in a rebuilding situation, but they get to build around a quarterback that had as good a year as probably anybody can remember in college football in Joe Burrow in the season he had a year ago.
All All right, Dan Orlovsky, look, it's not really the day to go glass half empty, but these guys have a major transition coming up, and everybody's got a flaw in their game. Let's look at what they're going to have to work on, and we'll start with Joe Burrow.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to nitpick here with Joe Burrow big time, right? Try to find something. I'd say this. If you were going to say one thing that he does not do incredibly well, it's his arm strength. And so the reality of the NFL is the windows that you throw into are smaller, and they close quicker. And so how quickly does he adjust to that? And then Greg touched on this with, you know, throwing some guys that were covered open. We don't see that often in the NFL. Not often are you throwing four or five balls that are kind of opportunity balls downfield and guys just are going to make every single one. So how quickly he adjusts to the windows, and then how quickly he adjusts to trusting some guys in the NFL that can do that. Because some guys you cannot trust to do that. And so that's going to be, I don't want to call it a flaw, but his biggest kind of growth. For Tua, know thyself. You know, Tua has so many incredible traits, and oftentimes those traits lead him to play a little bit too much like Russell Wilson. He needs to be more like Drew Brees, where it's understanding, listen, scrambling is not your strength. Running around is not your strength. Your strength is getting through progressions and getting the ball out of your hands. That'll keep you safe. That's going to be the biggest growth for him. Justin Herbert, I think wherever, you know, now that the Chargers have him, they need to unlock an aggressive mindset for Justin Herbert. He needs to believe that he is the offense, that he's the superhero of that offense, not that he's just the quarterback. So they got to get him to be aggressive, kind of trust the physical talents and physical traits that he has, and believe in his mindset. Listen, I can make any throw, and just be aggressive with the football and believe that you can throw people open and make the perfect throw, because he's got so much talent, but he's got to believe in himself a little bit more in his talent. And then for Jordan Love, don't assume. You know, a lot of times quarterbacks get told, don't predetermine where you're going to throw the football. I've never believed in that. You need to know where you're going to throw the football. Don't assume who you're going to throw the football to. And he would kind of lose his eyes because he would stare one way and assume it was going to move certain defenders and come back and just throw the ball blindly right to linebackers and underneath coverage, or safeties and underneath coverage. So he's got to get to a point where he listens to his feet more and plays reactionary with his eyes rather than just assuming things are going on with the defense. So they all have their own flaws. They all have their own challenges to the coaching staffs that they're going to go to. And the biggest thing is how quickly those guys can minimize those flaws and maximize those strengths.
Well, listen, Greg, Dan and Tim got to weigh in on this earlier, but you weren't with us. So I'd be curious what you thought about the decision by the Packers to draft Jordan Love in the first place.
Well, if I'm Jordan Love, I couldn't be happier. I get a couple years to just sit back and watch one of the best to ever do it right in front of me, learning from him and trying to adopt some of the things that he's done into my game. And frankly, when you look at Jordan Love, guys, he might have as high a ceiling as any quarterback in this draft. I mean, as far as just raw horsepower, he can throw it down the field. He can fit in tight windows. He's a better athlete than you realize when he's out and about in the pocket. However, kind of like what Dan just alluded to, when his feet are not underneath him and when he predetermines where he's going to throw the football and the coverage dictates otherwise, he's an absolute disaster. The guy has to understand that there are progressions, and you need to go from one to two and to three and allow your feet to talk to you. But when his feet are planted and they're stable and they're set and he's decisive, he might be the most impressive amongst all the quarterbacks in this NFL draft.
Every quarterback has those head-scratching interceptions, the one that we all know, you watch it and go, as soon as it left his hands, he wanted that one back. We all know it, and everyone has them. Even the great ones have them. But the reality is that when you watch Jordan Love, there's just too many of them. And I think that's why I would be a little bit concerned about how this plays out in Green Bay. One of the things, you know, really the best way to get better is to actually play. And if you just look at the next two seasons, unless Green Bay just decides that they're going to trade Aaron Rodgers after this year, which there'd be a massive cap hit with that. Like, I don't know how you really know if Jordan Love is improving on some of the mistakes that he made at Utah State against really at oftentimes, you know, low caliber, you know, opponents. So I think that the adjustment, while it can be a good thing to learn behind a great quarterback, at the same time, you need to be out there and, you know, around live bullets to figure out and make some mistakes to improve. I think that's going to be a challenge for him.
Yeah, Tim, I agree with that. The reason why I do really like the fit, though, with Matt LaFleur in this offense is this offense is so predicated on, and Greg kind of used this phrase, your feet tell you where to throw the football. And talking about getting through progressions, so often he would just like, all right, that guy's going to be open and throw it. And the offense that the Packers are going to run is that Kyle Shanahan, Mike Shanahan, Gary Kubiak offense where Jordan Love is going to have those bad habits kind of stripped down, and he will learn how to play quarterback really from the ground up rather than the top down. And so he'll trust his feet to tell him where he throws the football. And to Greg's point, if he gets there, that physical talent is so unique.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us for the first time this afternoon. And Mike T, when you think about Jalen Hurts and you think about a good productive fit, who stands out?
Oh, for me, it's easy. It's the Baltimore Ravens. He reminds me of a player that Rex and I had in Brad Smith because he's so dangerous with the ball in his hands. He could run it and he could throw it. He had 32 touchdowns last year. People don't remember at Oklahoma, though, he also had 20 rushing touchdowns. Could you imagine the amount of pressure that Baltimore offense could put on opposing defenses if he's in the backfield with Lamar Jackson in terms of two players who could run it and throw it? I think he has a good skill set in terms of good foundation. He has to improve his downfield accuracy. His accuracy overall this year was pretty good at 69.7%, but my concerns are getting the ball down the field. But Baltimore would be a great place for him to start his career.
Yeah, you know, Mike T, you mentioned Brad Smith. It's funny because if Brad Smith would have been coming out of college right now, he would have been a quarterback and not a receiver. So to me, it's a, you know, that's an interesting comparison right there. But I look at this guy. One thing we know about him, he is a winner, an absolute winner. Two-time SEC Offensive Player of the Year, if I recall. But when I look at him, I think New England is a perfect spot. Look, Saban goes back to history with Belichick, and there's no reason why this guy can't get it done. Obviously, he's going to do it a little differently. His legs are a huge weapon, and it would look different. But I know one thing: he's a winner, and I wouldn't be surprised if Bill Belichick's thinking the same way I am, and he goes out and he drafts this young man.
I see it as Seattle, guys, and it's because right now when you look at the backup quarterback situation for the Seahawks, it's a little grim. And frankly, Russell Wilson's been absolutely incredible staying healthy throughout the course of his career, but you put Jalen Hurts in a situation like that where he can learn from an excellent quarterback in his own right and develop over the course of time. If you draft him in the second round, guys, I don't see it. I mean, I don't see him contributing right away because, frankly, you guys mentioned him being more like Brad Smith. I see him more being like Tim Tebow. Winner? Yes, absolutely. Physical? Absolutely. Very hard worker, very strong, very diligent, unbelievable intangibles. All those things are true. But there's also very sporadic with his feet. His accuracy is very inconsistent. And his ball and timing with the way he anticipates throws isn't always there. So I think Jalen Hurts is a long-term project that needs to be figured out and kind of learn under a great pro like Russell Wilson out in Seattle where he can be exclusively a backup for quite some time.
One thing I'd like to add, though, one thing I like to add is it's the axiom that the tape sets the floor and the character sets the ceiling. This guy loves football. He's a great competitor, as Rex alluded to. And I agree, Greg, his game is far from complete, but it's a really good base to start with. Very productive at two different programs. He gets around the right coaching staff. And if they could clean up this accuracy issue, you could hit big later on this draft with somebody like Jalen.
Mel, hello. Louis Riddick is here. Wendy. Jim Nagy is here. We got a full house. Listen, fellas, let's talk about winners from last night. Round one winners. Mel, I'll start with you.
Minnesota Vikings. I think you look at Rick Spielman and the job he did. I think get players at the point in which they really are a bargain and a good value pick. Justin Jefferson, I thought, would go maybe middle of the first. Thought he had moved up after running that 4-4-3 with all that great productivity at LSU. And then Jeff Gladney, to get Gladney at the end of the first round. Talking about a guy now with Jefferson helping out that wide receiver spot. That was a major void. And Jefferson is a guy, high character kid, going to come in and be ready to produce right away. And then I think you look at a guy on the other side of the ball in Gladney, who uses his hands well enough to basically break up the pass without causing any penalty flags to be thrown. Very intuitive cornerback. I thought he would be maybe a late first, early second. They traded back, so they didn't reach. They didn't stretch it a bit. They took him at a point where it was more palatable than where they were picking. So I give Rick Spielman a lot of credit. Give the Minnesota Vikings an A grade for day one.
Yeah, I almost went San Francisco here, but I agree with Mel. Love these two picks for the Vikings. They addressed a couple big needs. Don't know what happened with Diggs up there, but as Mel talked about, Justin Jefferson's a high football character guy. He's going to come in and adjust really quickly. Played great in the slot this year for LSU. Was a different player inside than he was on the perimeter. And then he's got the huge catch radius. He's the guy that Joe Burrow trusted to just put the ball up to, and he would make a play for him. So reminds me of Michael Thomas from the New Orleans Saints. Really similar, comparable player. And then Jeff Gladney, really fun player to watch on tape. You know, the only real knock is size. But he doesn't play small. He's so aggressive. He's feisty, fast. He's athletic. And as Mel talked about, getting his hands on balls, 26 passes defense the past 2 years. That seems like a Mike Zimmer type of pick. I really like what the Vikings did.
Well, Jim, you were going to go with San Francisco. I am going to go with San Francisco. And I'll tell you this, General Manager John Lynch, he absolutely knocked it out the park, I thought, on the first day. You know, you trade back one spot in the first round, you pick up Javon Kinlaw, who may be one of the top two or three most explosive players pound for pound in this draft, a guy who's going to really just add to the other first-round picks that they have on their defensive line. And he's going to be one of those guys who may have the highest upside and the most untapped potential of all of them right now. And that includes Nick Bosa. So adding Javon Kinlaw, that is a spectacular move. And then they come back at the 25th pick, and they take one of my favorite guys out of Arizona State, Brandon Ayuk, a guy who is the ultimate catch-and-run big play guy, the guy who can, like, take it to the house on wide receiver screens, quick slants, quick dig routes, and he's also a master at running the double move down the field, and he's just a big play waiting to happen. That's exactly what they needed in their wide receiver core. General Manager John Lynch, Head Coach Kyle Shanahan, A-plus from me.
All right. You're easy grader there, Lewis Riddick. I like it. Plus, Javon Kinlaw had the best family reaction. He wins out. I don't know if we give an award for that, but I just did. All right. The NFL draft resumes tonight, 7 Eastern on ESPN, ABC, and the NFL Network. The Bengals once again kick things off. Then they will be followed by the Colts, the Lions, and the Giants, the Patriots. So go figure. Stop me if you've heard this before. Enter the night with the most picks of day two of any team in this draft. All right. Plenty to go. We've got safety, Xavier McKinney and Antoine Winfield Jr. They are the top of Mel's list of best available prospects. Also out there, skill position players, DeAndre Swift, J.K. Dobbins, and Michael Pittman Jr. Mel, who's your favorite still on the board?
It's Xavier McKinney. You think about a guy, if you had a list of the best pure football players, forget speed, forget all that and those numbers. Ran 4.63, but he plays a lot faster than that. He's all over the field making plays. He had 95 tackles this past year, 3 sacks, intercepted 3 passes, and forced 4 fumbles. He will be a great second-round pick, and he will provide an attitude and leadership to the back end of a defensive secondary in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm glad Mel went McKinney because I almost did, but I'm going with A.J. Epinesa, the defensive end from Iowa. 26 and a half career sacks, double digits each of the last 2 years. Not a real twitchy guy off the edge, but a big body rusher. He's got feel, he's got effort. He's going to get on the field next year in a sub-rush role and be a big, big contributor for some team.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Jonathan Taylor. Shocking, I know. Look, this is the most productive college football running back in his first three years in the history of college football. 1,900 yards plus 3 straight years. Now, I know my man Mel Kiper is sitting there going, but Lou, he doesn't catch the ball to the backfield. He has ball security issues. Look, these are things that are correctable fundamental aspects of his game. It's something you can attribute to how he was used at Wisconsin. The ball security issue is something he will be coached out of. And I'll tell you this, he's going to be a steal for whoever picks him here early on the second day.
And Lou, J.K. Dobbins runs fierce. Ball security's improved. Hands have to get a little bit better. Had a couple key drops this year. But as a runner, he's as good as Jonathan Taylor. And DeAndre Swift, versatile kid out of Georgia, figures to be a second-round pick as well. Swift, to me, when you look at completeness, He checks the boxes. Now, he's not as dynamic, in my opinion, a runner as Jonathan Taylor. He certainly doesn't have the ball security issues. He's a good receiver, not maybe as good as Clyde Edwards-Helaire, went to the Chiefs at the end of the first round last night. But all-around completeness as a running back is why in the second round, normally he should have been a first-round pick, but the priority now isn't running backs anymore, and I've been talking about that, seems like, for 30 years. But I think all three of those backs, Taylor, Swift, and Dobbins, will be great second-round draft choices.
Well, Jake Fromm looks to go early in today's draft when round two gets underway. According to Mel Kiper Jr., the strong arm Jacob Eason, the best quarterback prospect left on this board. Last season, 16% of Eason's pass attempts traveled 20 or more air yards, actually a higher rate than both Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa. The question, will the Patriots bring in either of these guys? The question really is, will the Patriots just pick some players? Either way, we've picked our Mike Reese. Mike, what can you tell us about the New England chances of bringing in a quarterback at some point tonight?
Well, Wendy, the Patriots have five picks. This is really the heart of their draft. And specific to the quarterback question, it's interesting to go back to last night. You know, they're at 23, and Jordan Love is right there for them with this big quarterback question, and they just trade right out of there, which in part is a statement of confidence to what they have on the roster, which includes Jarrett Stidham. But they still would like to add a quarterback, I'm told, at some point in this draft. But here's two key points. They are not going to force it, Wendy. They have a lot of needs on this roster. And the second point that was brought up to me is that it's a unique position. You know, ESPN Stats and Information, our great department, pointed out that about 12 quarterbacks on average are drafted each year over the last decade. So teams really only have a small handful of quarterbacks that they would actually consider drafting in the draft. So a lot of things have to fall into place, similar like it did for the Patriots in 2014 when Jimmy Garoppolo was there late in the second round.
Mike, thank you. And I certainly believe as well that New England won't force it. That's just really not in their DNA, usually not how they do things in Foxborough. Dan Orlovsky, I'll start with you in the Patriots quarterback situation. Would you take a quarterback if you're New England?
Mike brings up a great point of the belief of Jarrett Stidham kind of showed up last night. You know, Jake Fromm would be someone that, listen, if he falls to one of those four third-round picks, Jake Fromm would be somebody that I think really fits New England. If you think about the things that, in the intangibles, right, that are totally in line with what New England wants, but also he fits their style of offense. He's really good throwing the ball in between the numbers. He's great in the pocket. He's got great command. He's a ball distributor. It's a kind of your dink and dunk style of quarterback. With his ability to play point guard in those regards. So I could see Jake Fromm, you know, but I don't think that New England needs this is the way I look at it. Where did they have Jarrett Stidham ranked coming out of the draft? And have they kind of elevated their belief in him? And is there anybody left in this draft that it's not a competition thing? Is there anybody left in this draft that they think or they have graded higher than they had Jarrett Stidham, right? Like if they had Jacob Eason ranked higher than Jarrett Stidham, maybe. Do they have Jake Fromm graded higher than they had Jarrett Stidham? Then maybe. But I don't think they force it. The one guy I would say would be Jake Fromm.
Yeah, I say it last night when they passed on the opportunity to add Jordan Love. He was the last guy in this draft that has as much or more arm talent than Jarrett Stidham. So when you let him go, now you're dealing with guys that they're going to have to be high intangibles guys. And to me, there's two in this draft. Jake Fromm, we've talked about, and also Jalen Hurts. Going back to my time in New England, both these guys fit that value system in New England. They're gym rats. Those guys are really hard to find. They're winners. They're leaders. You look at Jalen Hurts, probably came into this process as a fourth-round pick. The more the NFL has spent time around this guy, the more they've bought into him. So just from knowing what New England values at that position, and a guy that might not have the same arm talent and physical tools that Jarrett Stidham has, because his are very good. I'm a huge believer in Jarrett Stidham. You're going to have some of these other things to compensate, and the two guys that have them are Jake Fromm and Jalen Hurts.
You know what's interesting to me? Their belief in Jarrett Stidham actually started last year, guys, on Labor Day when they cut Brian Hoyer. So last year, with championship aspirations, they're going into the season with Tom Brady and a very small sample set on Jarrett Stidham. So not only did they believe in him last night over Love, but it goes back a year ago to just one preseason that he was their backup The one quarterback for me, and I know, Dan, it's going to be shocking that you and I actually see quarterbacks just a little bit differently, but is Jacob Eason. You know, Jacob Eason was beaten out by Jacob Fromm at Georgia. He went up to Washington. He had one good year. He's sort of the prototypical in-the-pocket quarterback. He has to clean up his footwork, his accuracy. I think maybe at the bottom of the second, third round, I like his upside. And even though Fromm has incredible intangible guys, I agree with that. I just think at the end of the day, Fromm, the field's going to be condensed because he can't get the ball outside the numbers. And that's why I would separate Eason over Fromm, because at least at the end of the day, Eason can get the ball down the field outside the numbers. And no matter how smart, how studious, and how dependable Fromm is, I don't ever think his arm ability is going to be good enough.
Mike T, I'm sitting here trying to figure out how you didn't draft me, because I was 6'5", I was 235 pounds, I had a pretty strong, how did you pass on me in the first round, man? Listen, Eason has got so much physical intrigue. You talked about the arm strength, and that is kind of in the New England tree, so to speak. I would say this: if the New England Patriots believe that Jacob Eason's off the field and in intangibles and leadership qualities can match his physical qualities, then they should take him with the second round pick. I mean, that's the truth. Is if they believe that those things can match the physical talent, take him with your newly acquired second round pick. But that's a question that New England has to answer. And Mike T, that wouldn't have been a question for me, man. I would have been the same on both levels.
Okay, you check both boxes?
He's still checking boxes, Mike T. All right, guys. Thank you very much. Mort and Adam are back with us, our intrepid insiders, as we look ahead to round two. And, guys, speaking of which, because it won't be long, what will you be watching tonight? And we'll start with the quarterbacks.
Well, we're going to start with Jake Fromm here. I think the expectation that I'm hearing is that maybe he gets taken in the third round. You know, he does have these great intangibles. Yes, quarterback coaches fall in love with him. But the physical skills, as Mike Tannenbaum pointed out, are pretty average. It's interesting. He has the distinction of chasing off 2 5-star quarterbacks in both Jacob Eason and Justin Fields. But that was because Kirby Smart, the head coach of Georgia, felt he was a game manager, and that's why he stuck with him. Some believe that was a mistake at Georgia. Now, so Adam, go ahead with yours.
And Mort, you heard Jim Nagy talk before about Jalen Hurts elevating his stock during this process. He came in as a fourth-round pick, and I believe he's going to be going in the second round tonight. There are just too many teams that like him. The Colts have a need at quarterback. The Steelers have a need at quarterback. There's a lot of teams out there that need quarterbacks, and I believe Jalen Hurts has elevated his value into the second round of this draft tonight, Mort.
Yeah, he's definitely become an intriguing guy. And, you know, let's talk about Jacob Eason. I was a little surprised by Jim Nagy saying that I thought he talked about his intangibles. But listen, he is the prototypical size and the arm and some pedigree there, because his dad, Tony Eason, certainly played in the NFL. But as teams have peeled back the onion, what they don't like is what they're hearing about his work ethic. It does not meet the standard. And will it ever meet the standard? Even in this offseason leading up to the draft, so Jacob Eason is intriguing on tape. I don't know that he's got glowing reports from the Washington staff or even from the Georgia staff. So I do think there's a team or two that says that's too much talent not to take a chance on.
And Mort, those are the rookie quarterbacks that could be in play tonight. The veterans who are on the trade block have been in play and will be in play all weekend long. You start with Trent Williams. The Redskins have been having negotiations with teams, as have the Jaguars, about Yannick Ngakoue, but they have said that they are going to be unable to deal Yannick Ngakoue in their mind. Now, again, there are other veterans out there. Andy Dalton has a pricey contract number with Cincinnati. Yannick Ngakoue is the guy that Jacksonville doesn't think could be able to deal. I think of all the veterans, the one that's most likely to be dealt at some point this weekend would be the Washington offensive tackle, Trent Williams. He's the name to watch. He's the name to monitor. The other players, the other veterans, were in a time where some of them with the big money that they would command, like Yannick Ngakoue or Matt Judon, whoever it would be, they'd have to take a physical and pass a physical. It's hard to get a physical these days, and teams are going to be leery about paying money at this point in time to players like that.
Plenty of talent still on the board as we enter day two. If you're a prospect that was disappointed by last night's results, consider this. Last year, second-rounders actually took more snaps last season than did those drafted first. I like it, Rex. Who do you like tonight?
I like Xavier McKinney out of Alabama, one of the most productive players in the entire draft. It's hard to believe he's still there. He ran a poor 40. Who cares? Put the tape on. The guy is a tackling machine. He makes plays all over the place, so I love the guy. The next guy is Antoine Winfield. He's like his dad. He's short. Who cares? He's not small. He's short, but he's another guy that'll tackle you, and he can flat run, great in coverage. He's got the pedigree. Both these guys are going to be stars in the league, first-year starters.
I look at KJ Hill out of Ohio State. You talk about a kid that's been coached really well under Brian Hartline, and you find a team that's looking for a slot receiver. Listen, this kid can absolutely route you up, and a team is going to like him tonight, take him tonight, and then add him to an offense, and he will wear out the middle of the field. And then listen, Jalen Hurts, one of the greatest stories that we've kind of had come into the draft in a long time in his journey. We're at a time in the NFL where it's about what you can do, not what you can't do. And put him on a team tonight that runs the ball really well, believes in play action, has a good defense, and man, you can add him to your football team and just open up a ton of new plays for your offense. I like those two players tonight.